So we are in the 11th chapter where Arjuna, the student, having seen the cosmic form of the Lord, which is represented here by an artist, where he sees the whole universe and the thousands of hands of the Lord and the thousands of eyes and the face and the whole universe, the sun and the moon and the stars, everything. So he is filled with first wonderment, and then he becomes afraid because he cannot handle this vastness and all that is happening in that divine form. So he does the stuti of the Lord, praises the Lord in these verses from 46. The 10 verses are the beautiful praise of the Lord, where he says who you are. Oh, you are the Lord of the universe. You are the father, the mother. Everything has emerged from you. You are the origin of all the gods, all the forms of the divine forms, all the powers, the celestial powers, the sun and the moon and the vayu and the air and the oceans. Everything work at your command. And I feel so bad because as a friend, I treated you as my friend. I had my arm around your shoulder and we were walking and I was insulted you, called you names. So I am afraid, and he apologizes for that. He says, I again and again I bow down to you and ask for your forgiveness. So that is what we had studied in the last few verses. Today we will do 45 onwards. Adrishta purvam hrishitosmi drishtva bhayena cha pravyathitam mano me tadeva me darshaya deva rupam prasida devesha jagannivasa. So, adrishta purvam. Purva means before. Adrishta means that which I have never seen before. Because what Arjuna has experienced, he of course obviously never seen that before. Rishitosmi asmi rishita. I am happy. Drishtva. Having seen what I had never seen before, I have become very happy. On the one hand, I am happy because I am delighted because I saw your cosmic form. But then, bhayena cha pravyathitam manome. But I also have fear, because what is this vastness? I am overwhelmed by that. We'll talk a little bit about that. Why does Arjuna have fear? And pravyathitam, and my mind is agitated. Not only I am afraid, but my mind is agitated. So it's a mixture of emotions we are seeing in the mind. That's the beauty of this description, where Sanjay, who is describing this, and Ved Vyas, who has written this, not only has talked about the events, but the emotions that are going through the mind of the various characters. He says, I am afraid and I am agitated. So he says, tada eva me darshaya deva rupam. That's why, what do I want you me to show me? Me darshaya, please show me deva rupam. I want to see your divine form of the one with the four limbs. I want to see that original divine form. Prasida devesha jagannivasa. Prasida means be merciful towards me. Prasida also means be, having become pleased with me, please be merciful. Deva esha, oh, the Lord of the world. Jagannivasa, and the Lord of all the devtas. So he is continuing to, of course, to praise the Lord, but at the same time he has fear. And why does he have fear? Swamiji has, in his commentary and in his tapes, has described it very beautifully, the emotion. So I'll try to the best of my ability to cover that. So he says, adrishta purvam hrishitosmi drishtva. That is pretty obvious. You know, suppose suddenly the Lord were to appear before you, you would be so happy. Oh, if Jesus Christ was here, or Krishna, or Shiva, or Buddha, or whatever the Lord you believe in, Guru Nanak, obviously you would be happy. But why does he get fearful and why does he get agitated? So he says that, Swamiji explains it, he says that what happens is our intellect and our ego limits our understanding and our ability to comprehend. Our intellect's ability is not limitless, and our ego, the limited perceiver, feeler and thinker that I think I am to be, it limits my ability to think. It's like, you know, you cannot think outside the box. You know, they say think outside the box. So we are very limited with our understanding. And we can only understand what we can see. You know, what I can see, hear, smell, taste, touch, or what I can conceive, you know, the emotions or the ideas. And as we were talking about it, the intellect can only see that which has a name, form, and a qualities. So the name, form, and naam, roop, and guna. Those are the only things that the intellect can perceive. So I can only see what I know. Suppose I tell you something, gno, 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 and you say, what is that? You say, that's what it is, gno, gno, gno. You cannot, because you don't have a name for it, you don't have a form, nobody has explained to you. If I tell you gorilla, or if I tell you camel, okay, that you have heard, immediately your mind forms an image of a camel, or a gorilla, or a lion, or the Empire State Building. You know, those things you know. But suddenly if I tell you something, so Brahman is like that. The total consciousness does not have name, does not have form, does not have qualities. Even though we have given it a name of Brahman, or we have called it the total consciousness of Sat Chit Anand, these are all poor attempts to describe that truth. Whether you look at the Gita or the Bible or the Quran or the Guru Granth Sahib or the Dhammapada of Buddha, they all have attempted to describe the truth as best as they can in human words, whether it's Sanskrit or Latin or Greek or Pali. But this truth cannot be described in human words, cannot be understood by the intellect, cannot be. So then if they say, okay, if the book cannot describe it, why am I reading this book? Why am I listening to the teacher? Why am I listening to, you know, Gita or Jesus or Buddha? Because these great prophets and saints and incarnations of the Lord have themselves understood and experienced this truth. And they are trying to share it with us who at this moment are ignorant. It's like a lady who has enjoyed the bliss of being a married, you know, woman and a mother and all that. And so what is the bliss of married life? How pleasant it is to be a mother and a wife and be with the family. And then now there is a five-year-old girl or a four-year-old girl, and she says, what is the glory? Why is it, what is the wonderful things about married, being married? Now to a five-year-old girl, how can that lady explain all the joys of motherhood and the joys of, you know, being with the husband and enjoying all that? You can't. So you have to explain in very simple terms, you know, when mommy and daddy. So you have to make it very simple, which that girl will understand. But what you are explaining to her and what you have experienced cannot be put into words. All you can say is, when you grow up, then you will understand. You end with that. And so similarly, the prophets have come down to our level in these books, because they are at a much higher level, but they have come down in these books to our level to explain it to us. But then they, at the end, they say this knowledge cannot be put into words. There was one prophet, he says, words cannot express it, but I have to speak because I have experienced that. He says it very beautifully. He says, whatever I'm writing, he has actually written 18,000 verses in praise of this Lord. And he says, none of them expresses the glory of what I have experienced, but I have no choice. I have to tell you why, so that you may also attain that highest truth. So we are at that level where we are not able to experience and handle that truth. So Arjuna was like one of us. I mean, he had studied, he was a friend of the Lord, he was a devotee of the Lord. But he had not studied the Upanishads in detail. He had not sat for meditation for long periods of time. You know, his whole time was spent either in the palace or in the forest, you know, when he was exiled from his kingdom. And even when he was exiled, he was trying to get his kingdom back and all that. So at that level, when the ego experiences the truth, it is not able to handle it. And that's why when people sit for meditation, it's very interesting. People sit for meditation, and when their mind is becoming quiet and their ego sense goes away, they get fearful, because the ego does not like its death. The ego does not, death does not mean that the person dies, but this, the sense of I, this individuality, this limited I that I am, Anil or Diana or Pankaj or Anamika, whatever that I am, which I have held on to for many, many years, not only many years since birth, but many lifetimes, I have this ego. And to give up that ego is very difficult. And so when you go into meditation and the mind becomes quiet, and what happens is this ego sense gets weakened. And slowly you feel that I am not this limited body, and you feel the oneness with that. And that sometimes does happen when you sit for meditation. These experiences do happen. But what happens is the ego gets scared. Oh my God, what's happening to me? Why am I, you know, losing myself? And so immediately it brings you back. Then you come back to this. No. That was just an illusion. What I experienced. Actually, the truth is this world, this body. That is what I, this is the right thing. It's actually the opposite. Actually, you are experiencing the reality, but you are so afraid that you immediately come back. And then people have come and asked Swamiji, if in my meditation this ego disappears, then who's going to take care of my wife and children? You know, they are worried about things like that. That, you know, if Swamiji says, if you are that worried about your wife and children, don't worry, you won't go anywhere. You will stay here. You know, because that is all we are concerned. It does not mean that you're not supposed to take, or that a realized master will not. In fact, for a realized master, not only his wife and children, but the whole universe becomes his, you know, his goal, his purpose. So he takes care of everyone. So the ego, when it's in the mind, becomes silent, gets fearful. And that is what Arjuna experienced. What Arjuna had experienced was that in that limited individuality where you can see him sitting there in front of Krishna, he had experienced that whole universe, and he himself was in it. And he said, what is happening to me? Am I this one sitting on the chariot, or am I part of this whole totality? Is that the truth, or is this the truth? And so he became very fearful because he couldn't understand what is happening to me. You know, he was not yet ready for that truth. You know, like a rishi who has gone into meditation and has quietened his mind. And when that sage experiences it, he is totally ready. But Arjuna, because of the Lord's grace, the Lord's love for him, was shown this beautiful vision. So he's very happy, but at the same time, he's very fearful. Fear, he's afraid. Talking about fear reminds me of a little story. This man called the doctor. He says, doctor, I'm very afraid. He says, why? He said, my uncle is sick. You know, he's telling me he's very sick. I'm very afraid for him. So doctor says, uncle is not sick. You know, he just thinks he is sick. Actually, he's fine. He just thinks he's sick. Don't worry about him. So he said, okay. Then he hung up the phone. A week later, the doctor was, you know, a little bit concerned about his patient. So he calls the nephew and he says, how's your uncle doing? He says, not very good. He thinks he's dead. So I guess his fear was right. But anyway, so here Arjuna is afraid because he has lost his ego. He has lost his separateness, and he feels himself one with the totality. And he says, oh my God, what is happening to me? And so that's why he says, bhayena cha pravyathitam manome. That's why my mind is afraid, because I cannot handle this. And that's why the progress in spirituality has to be gradual. And that's why even the teachers, if you suddenly go and ask them a difficult concept of Upanishad or Advait, Makranda and all, they will say, first go and read Tattva Bodh, you know, read Atma Bodh, read the basic text, you know. And then as you slowly evolve, read the Bhagavad Gita, and then you can come to the Upanishad. It's like, you know, a second grade student asking a PhD question of mathematics, you know, to the professor. He'll say, you know, wait a minute, you know, do you know simple calculus, mathematics, algebra? So similarly, the student here has been exposed to this great truth, which is actually a wonderful. That's why this chapter, when you read it, it's so beautiful, because you actually can visualize the form. The poetry and the detailed descriptions have been given. if you close your eyes, you can actually see that form of the Lord, and it's very nice. So that's what he says. Bhayena cha pravyathitam manome. I can't handle it. Tada ev me darshaya deva rupam. That's why I want to see your divine form. Because, see, Krishna, if you look in that picture there, has two arms. But then here, Krishna is shown to have four arms, and there Krishna is shown to have 1,000 arms. So they are all one. It is that one consciousness. But here it is the total consciousness, the Brahman, the totality. There is Krishna, the one who had appeared on the earth and took a human body. And that is the one driving the chariot. But here we see Krishna with four arms, and that is Vishnu, that is the Lord Vishnu, who is said to be the sustainer of the universe. Because they say the consciousness or the Lord has three aspects. Brahma is the creator, Vishnu is the sustainer, and then Shiva is the one, the destroyer, the one who takes us at the time of death. So Vishnu, the sustainer of the universe, actually had taken the form of Krishna. Had we worship Krishna as an avatar or as an incarnation of Vishnu, but we also say that he was a manifestation of the Purushottam. That's why in the 15th chapter, Krishna is regarded as the total consciousness, Purushottam. And those who know the truth, they say, I don't know how right it is, that they say that the first 11 years and 52 days of his life, 11 saal or 52 din, 11 years and 52 days, he was the total consciousness. He was Brahman, the total consciousness. And that's where he was playing in Gokul and doing the Ras, and where he did the Ras Leela, where he sang, he played the flute, and all the gopis danced. And not only the gopis danced, but the gods from heaven appeared and the whole universe was watching. So that was the total consciousness, Brahman playing through Krishna. So when he was a child, actually he was that consciousness, that Brahman playing through him. That's why the Ras Leela has so much significance, because we say the Lord, but the total Brahman consciousness was in him, the power was in him. After 11 years and 52 days, when he leaves Gokul and then goes to Mathura to fight his uncle and then does all the other things, including telling the Gita message, they say he was a Vishnu's power was in him. It's all, you know, terminology. He was, of course, still the Lord, but that was the power of Vishnu, the Lord, playing through him. So he says, Tada eva me darsha deva rupam. I want to see that beloved form that I love. You know, because we always say, is God form or formless? People always have this debate. Some people say he's form, some people say he's formless. They say, how can you limit him to one form of Krishna or Ganpati or Mother Goddess, Saraswati or Lakshmi? No, you guys are stupid. You know, God is all pervading, formless. You know, you should read the Upanishads. Other person says, I don't want to hear all this. What I love is, I love Krishna playing the flute. When I see that, my heart is filled with love. Or when I see Ganpati sitting there, I want to just, you know, embrace him because I love him. I don't know who is this formless and all. In fact, there's a very famous story of Uddhav, who was a friend of Krishna. I might have told that story before, but he actually believed in the formless because he had studied the Upanishads. He was a great scholar. He could chant all the mantras, and he was very proud and arrogant about his knowledge. So he tells Krishna, you know, Krishna had left the gopis. The gopis were the cowherd maidens who had listened to the flute. And they, after Krishna left, they used to just weep for him. Oh Krishna, when will you come back? And they were missing him. But they were happy that at least we got to spend those 11 years and 52 days with a little baby. We were able to hold him in our lap and love him and feed him and scold him and dance with him and play. So they were happy. But at the same time, once he left, they were missing him. So Uddhav tells Krishna, you know, these gopis, they don't know the truth. I'm going to go and tell them that, you know, Krishna, yeah, you are a form of the Lord, but the true Lord is formless. So I need to go educate them. You know, they are ignorant. They are rich cowherd women. You know, they have never gone to school. They have not studied the Upanishads. So I need to go educate them. So Krishna says, okay, go ahead. Because Krishna knew that my friend is becoming arrogant about his knowledge, and that's the greatest ego. You know, there is an ego of power, there is an ego of money, there is an ego of beauty. You know, I am more beautiful than everybody. But more subtler than that is the ego of knowledge, that I know more. And that ego is very, very powerful and can bring you down very quickly. The moment you get that idea that I know it. So Krishna says, go ahead and go. So Krishna goes there and tells these, so Uddhav goes there and tells these gopis, you don't need to worship this formless. You know, there is only one God, formless. That is the one, the truth. And this Krishna you are crying for, he's just an appearance. You know, he's a God, all right, but he's that formless, total has appeared. Why are you worried about Krishna who is gone? You see the formless everywhere. He's right here with you. You can see him. And he's there in space. He's there in earth and fire and trees. He's there everywhere. Why are you crying for that God who is gone? So they said, Uddhav, he says, all I know is, where does your formless live? He says, where does this, you know, formless live? He says, formless, he's everywhere. He says, well, does he have a name? Does he have a form? Does he have qualities? Does he have character? No, he doesn't have a name. He doesn't have form. He doesn't have qualities. He said, then get out. You can take him. You don't want that. Oh, we love that Krishna whom we used to hold in our hand, who used to play the flute, and we all dance to that. And when we just think about him, our eyes are filled with love. He said, that is the form we want. Get out of here. And then they also say, Uddhav man nahi das bish. Ek ho to gayo shyam sang. He said, I don't have 10 or 20 or 30 minds. He said, I have only one mind. And that has gone with Krishna. You are telling me to love this formless. But with which mind should I love that formless? I don't have. I only have one mind. Man nahi das bish. I have one mind and that is gone with Krishna. And now you are telling me to put my mind on this formless, all-pervading. I don't have any concept. So they educate him on the love for the form. It's not that one is inferior or one is superior. They are both fine. If you want to love God as the form, that is wonderful. If you can, in your intellect, conceptualize him as formless, that's okay too. There was a great sage, Raman Maharishi. And people came and asked him, is God form or formless? Now, Raman Maharishi was a very unique saint. He never answered the questions. He always answered the question with a question. So the questioner asked Maharaj, Raman Maharishi, is God form or formless? So Raman Maharishi says, are you form or formless? That was his answer. Do you have a form or are you formless? If you say, I have a form and this world has a form, then God has a form too. As long as you are limiting yourself to this human form, then the world also has a form. Then the table has a form and the chair has a form and the people have forms and God also has a form. You can worship him as a form, as whatever form. And that is fine. But as you, that is the basic, that is the kindergarten or that is the elementary school understanding. But as you evolve and as you read the Upanishads and as you meditate and as you experience that and as you understand, as you meet with great teachers and saints, you slowly come to see that one consciousness everywhere, which is all pervading. And then your own form also disappears. You say, I am that total formless consciousness and everybody is that. So that oneness can only happen when you consider yourself to be formless. And so it is a stage of evolution. So they are both right. We are not saying that one is wrong. It is depends on your level. And even the great Mahatmas or the sages, I've seen some of these great Swamijis, like Swami Chidananda, he used to come here. And he had this shivaling, you know, he had this little box and he had a shivaling, and he would open that box and every morning he would do puja for half an hour, one. He was a great Vedantin. He had a great knowledge of who am I. And if you sit, I have sat actually and talked to him, and one time Niru and I had the experience of meditating with him all alone on the top of in Sandipani in Bombay. We sat on the terrace and early morning we meditated, and just sitting with him for 15 or 20 minutes, it was like, it was a rare experience. I have never had that. He was such a great yogi, great scholar, but he still had his shivaling, and every morning he would pray half an hour to that. So if somebody who is that great a Vedantin can do that, what it means is that as long as you have this human body, mind and intellect, and as long as you have this little ego, it is very hard to conceptualize the totality. So continue to worship the Lord in the form, but do not limit him to that form. Do not say God is only in Krishna, he's not in Ganpati or Shiva, or he's not in Jesus, or he's not in Allah. No, that my God, that is Krishna, is there in all. He's there in Jesus, he's there in Muhammad, he's there in Buddha, he's there. So slowly you can extend that, and ultimately then when you have advanced, so you can experience that. So Arjuna had not yet advanced to that level of study, but he was rapidly carried by the grace of the Lord. The Lord in his love, he says, I love you, so you asked for it. And Arjuna had asked for it in the first verse. I want to see in the 11th chapter. Please show me that cosmic form. So he showed it to him, but he was not prepared. So that's why he had this. And then he uses the word Jagan Nivas. Now Jagan Nivas in the last word of this is a beautiful word which can be interpreted in two ways. One is Jagan Nivas means Jagat mein jo nivas karta hai. The one who lives in the whole universe is Jagan Nivas. That means he's there in all. So he's in there in the animals, the plants, the humans, the birds. Or jisme Jagat Nivas karta hai. That in which the whole world resides. So the consciousness which is the substratum of the whole universe. So it can be read in both ways. That which is there in everything, or that in whom everything is. So that's what he calls him. He says you are that abode, just like space. You know, that's why in Dakshinamurti, I know last week I praised that book. Sorry, there was only one copy, but we are trying to order more copies. A lot of people went to the office to buy it. But in that Dakshinamurti, which is a very small text, he says, what is the Lord? Vyomavat vyapta dehaya Dakshinamurtaye namaha. I prostrate to the Lord who is like space, whose body is like space. Vyomavat vyapta dehaya. How can you say that the God's body is like space? That's why they say the space is the closest thing to that reality. To understand that Brahman or consciousness, you can conceptualize space. And the relationship between me and the world and God can be explained very beautifully by space. And I was thinking about this concept, and it's like, say, I'm in sitting in that big hall, and I am a little pot. You know, say I'm a little pot. So there is a pot space. There's a small pot, a cup or something, a little pot. And then there is the hall space, the big hall space. And then there is the total space. Now there is the total consciousness space which extends for trillions of miles. But that space appears to be limited by the hall. So the hall, which is, I don't know, 3,000 or 4,000 or 5,000 square feet. So that space is limited by that hall and then further limited by that little pot. So there is a part space, there is the hall space, and then there is the total space. So the individual is like that part. And the world is like the hall, and the total consciousness is like Brahman, the total space. Now suppose the part were to break. Suppose the part falls down, it breaks. Then what happens? The part space merges with the room space, with the hall space. And then for some reason it happens that, you know, the building has to be broken down and something better, bigger is built. So they destroy the walls of the hall. So what happens? The hall space merges with the total space. Now that space is only one, but the total space appears to be divided by the whole space and then further restricted in that path space. But the path doesn't need to be broken. Suppose the path space says, I am this little part with this little space, but this whole hall is me because they are all space. I'm not separate from the hall. Not only that, I'm not separate from the total space. So you don't need to break the part, you don't need to break the walls. But if the little part can understand that I am that space, which is the hall space, which is the total universal space extending for trillions of miles, then right there he is realized. The part has realized the truth that I am that total space. So that is what they say. You do not need to die to realize. All you have to say is in this limited body, mind and intellect, that consciousness that is illumining me is the total consciousness of this whole world that is like the hall. But the consciousness does not only limit itself to the world, it extends way beyond the universe to that totality. So, that is how you can slowly transfer your understanding from me to the, slowly you can say, I am, okay, I love my family. Then you can extend your love of the family to your community or to your state or to your culture or to your church, to your religion, and then slowly, slowly you can expand it to the whole US, or then to the whole earth, then to the whole universe. So slowly you can expand your understanding. So living in that little part, you can enjoy the totality of that space. So that is why he has had that experience still living as Arjuna. That's why he's so confused. And it's a very beautiful verse. If anybody has any comments, I hope I was able to explain this concept, why he was afraid. Yes, yeah, exactly. Yeah. And many people have described it, especially when they begin meditation and they have, when they go deep into that, they do have that feeling of fear because the ego is afraid to let go. Because that shell of the ego is what's keeping me away from the totality, and that is the fear of letting go of whatever I held as so dear for the last 40, 50, 60 years and for many lifetimes. But that is being broken by the guru, by the teacher, and we don't want to let go. That's why we have fear. But if you had talked to a teacher who had understood it, he would have cleared your anxiety. If you had met somebody who had understood why that fear was. Yes. Sat and Asat. Sat and Asat, yeah, can be interpreted as that which is manifest and unmanifest. Yeah, you can interpret as that. Some people also interpret Sat as what exists and Asat is which does not exist. So you can interpret Sat and Asat in many ways. One is Sat means manifest, Asat means unmanifest. That is one way. But the actual Vedantic meaning of Sat is that which is real. That which is the truth, that which is the consciousness, that alone is Sat, that alone is truth, everything else is untruth, everything else is unreal. So that is the correct meaning of Sat and Asat. Sat means that which is the consciousness, the Brahman. Asat means all these bodies that you are seeing, the chair, the table, the humans, that's all Asat. That is all unreal. Unreal does not mean that it does not exist, but it has a temporary appearance. Upon that consciousness, we are all a temporary appearance upon that consciousness. So we are all Asat. But the reality is that alone is Sat. We are all Asat. We are all untrue. We are all unreal. So there are two ways. You know, Vedanta, that's why it's so complicated, because Sanskrit can be interpreted in different ways depending on the context. So one context means unmanifest and manifest, right? So that is one. So then you say, I am manifest and God is unmanifest. That means I cannot see him. So that is one way of looking at it. But another way of looking at Sat and Asat is Sat means that which is and Asat means that which is not. So what is the reality? What is always present? I am not, right? I am a temporary appearance. I was not there 65 years ago and then again in a few years I won't be there. But this consciousness that is real is always permanent. So when they say Sat, that means you, that is which is always present, and the, all of us are an appearance. All of us are Asat. Means we are here for 10, 50 years, 80 years, 100 years, then we are gone. This building was not there before 2005 and appeared, and then again in a few years it may not be here. So that which was not there appears and then may not be there in the future is Asat. So I think that meaning is better. So focus on that. I don't know which context is Swamiji talking about. So what is he saying? That kind of, we passed that long time ago. And the unmanifest. Right. So that consciousness is actually beyond the manifest and the unmanifest. The consciousness is beyond the, because manifest and unmanifest both are concepts. Like the seed is unmanifest and the tree is manifest, right? The seed is unmanifest, the tree is manifest. But the Lord is beyond both, the cause and effect, so that. So in reality, so there are many meanings of this. So it all depends on the context. Yeah, there's no contradiction. It's just the context. I mean, there are Sat you can interpret in 100 different ways. I only know a few, so.